Welcome back to Cyber Mornings Daily. It's great to have you with us for your daily download on all things cyber.
Good to be here.
So today we've got three really interesting stories developing that honestly, they give you a snapshot of just how complex and, well, never ending this cybersecurity challenge really is.
It really never stops, does it?
It doesn't. We're looking at a significant ransomware attack against a major tech company. Wait till you hear who got hit.
Okay.
Then we're going to dive into some suspected nation-state cyber snooping. And this stuff, it reads like a spy novel. Seriously.
I'm intrigued.
And finally, we'll touch on a data breach that just seems to keep getting bigger and bigger.
The long tail effect.
Exactly. Yeah. Think of these as like three separate threads that when you pull them together, they really show you the bigger picture of what's happening out there in the digital world.
Okay, where should we jump in first?
Let's definitely start with that headline grabber, the ransomware attack on Hitachi Vantara.
Now, for those of you who might not know, Hitachi Vantara is, well, they're a pretty big deal. They're a key part of the whole Hitachi group.
Right.
And they specialize in things like data storage, infrastructure, cloud management, and get this, even ransomware recovery services.
Well, the irony.
The irony is not lost, right?
Oh.
So over the weekend, they had to actually pull their servers offline, just trying to contain the damage.
Wow.
It really makes you wonder, you know, if a company in the security business can get hit like this.
What hope is there for the rest of us, right?
Right?
It's like the fire chief's house catching fire.
Exactly.
And it's not just their own systems at risk here. Hitachi Vantara works with some massive clients. We're talking BMW, Telefonica, T-Mobile.
Big names.
Huge names. China Telecom, even government agencies. That's a seriously impressive and, frankly, concerning list.
It is. You immediately think about the potential knock-on effects, the supply chain risk.
Absolutely. Now, they have confirmed the attack, and they've brought in the external experts to help them clean up and get back online securely. Standard procedure, really.
Mm-hmm. Standard playbook. But the whispers, the sources are pointing towards a ransomware crew called Akira.
Akira. Heard of them. Are they relatively new, or?
Well, they surfaced, I think, around March 2023. So not brand new, but they've definitely been making waves pretty quickly.
Okay.
And if the attribution holds, it tells us a couple of things. One, these groups are incredibly agile, always evolving.
Yeah.
And two, no sector, not even tech and security itself, is immune. We're also hearing that while their cloud services seem okay.
That's good, at least.
It is, but their internal Hitachi Vantara systems, their manufacturing operations, even their remote and support operations are apparently down.
Oof. Imagine the chaos that causes internally and for their customers needing support.
Exactly. Global operations, customer support, it's a major disruption.
Now, interestingly, it sounds like customers who host their own data might still have access. What does that tell you?
Well, it suggests the attackers perhaps targeted specific parts of Hitachi Vantara's managed infrastructure. Maybe their corporate network or specific service platforms.
Right.
Rather than, say, the underlying storage that self-hosted customers use.
Okay, that makes sense. A bit more targeted, maybe.
It could be. But here's the part that really makes you sit up straight.
Oh.
There are real concerns that multiple government projects they were working on have also been affected by this.
Okay, now that raises the stakes significantly. This isn't just about business disruption anymore.
Not at all. When you talk about government projects, you're potentially talking about national security implications.
Right. Sensitive data, critical infrastructure links. It could be much more serious than just locked files.
Precisely. Mm. The potential consequences jump way up. We're not just talking downtime. We could be talking compromised information impacting vital national operations.
And Akira, this group potentially behind it all, they're not exactly small-time players then.
Definitely not. Popping up last year, and they've already claimed hits on over 300 organizations. Some really recognizable names, too, like Stanford University, Nissan over in Oceania and Australia.
Wow. Okay. So they've been busy.
Very busy. And profitable, apparently. The FBI estimates they'd already pulled in something like $42 million in ransom from over 250 victims by April of this year.
$42 million. That's staggering. It really highlights this is a business for them.
It's absolutely a criminal enterprise and a very lucrative one. And their ransom demands, they seem to vary quite a bit. We've seen reports from negotiation chats suggesting anywhere from like $200,000 up to several million dollars.
So they tailor it based on who they hit.
Seems like it. Based on the victim size, their perceived ability to pay. It's a cold, hard calculation.
Chillingly efficient. Okay, let's switch gears now from ransomware gangs to the maybe more clandestine world of nation-states cyber espionage.
Okay, the spy novel stuff.
Right. So the security firm Stenton Alone, they've apparently uncovered a suspected Chinese espionage campaign. And what makes this really interesting is they believe they themselves and some of their high-value customers were actually the targets.
Wow. Talk about biting the hand that feeds security.
Exactly.
Yeah, that certainly raises eyebrows when a security company finds itself in the crosshairs. So the group they've identified, they're calling it Purple Haze.
Purple Haze, okay.
And they think it has loose ties to APT-15, which is, you know, a well-known, long-established, state-sponsored hacking group often linked to China.
APT-15, yeah, heard that name before. So how did Stenton Alone actually figure this out? Did they catch them red-handed in their own network?
Well, that's the intriguing part. The initial intrusion they traced back to 2024, it didn't directly hit Stenton Alone's main systems. Instead, it targeted a third-party company.
The supply chain again.
Exactly. A company that provides hardware logistics services for Stenton Alone employees.
So like getting the employee laptops or something?
Potentially managing the distribution or setup, yeah. It's like trying to get into a secure building by targeting the delivery driver or the catering company first. It's a clever indirect approach.
That is sneaky. And it sounds like this Purple Haze group has some interesting technical tricks up their sleeve.
They do. They seem to be using these things called operational relay box networks. ORB networks for short.
ORB networks.
Yeah. And a specific Windows back door that Stenton Alone has dubbed Gore Shell.
Gore Shell? Is that something new?
It's kind of interesting. It's not entirely novel. It actually repurposes an existing open source tool called ReverseSesh.
Okay.
And it uses that to create these covert reverse SSH connections back to the attacker's command and control servers.
So like taking a standard key and filing it down just right to fit a specific unauthorized lock.
That's a good analogy, yeah. And using these ORB networks, these relay boxes.
The significance of those.
Well, they make tracking and attribution incredibly difficult for defenders. Think of it like a constantly shifting network of proxy servers that bounce the attacker's connection all over the place.
Hides the real origin.
Exactly. It provides a significant layer of anonymity, making it really hard to figure out where the attack is actually coming from. It's all about misdirection and blending in.
Makes sense. And using a repurposed tool like Gore Shell probably helps them blend in too, right? Might look like legitimate SSH traffic.
Precisely. That's often the goal. Make your malicious activity look as normal as possible to evade detection. Smart move by the attacker.
Well, it seems Purple Haze, or whoever is using these tools, has been keeping busy elsewhere, too.
It appears so.
Mm-hmm.
Stenton Alone noted that an unnamed government-supporting entity in South Asia was also targeted late last year, around October 2024, using these same ORB networks and Gore Shell.
Okay, same playbook.
Right. And what's even more interesting is that the same entity was apparently hit a few months earlier, maybe June 2024, with a different piece of malware called ShadowPad.
ShadowPad. That also sounds familiar. Also linked to China Nexus groups, isn't it?
It is. ShadowPad is often considered a successor to another well-known backdoor called PlugX. It's primarily used for espionage, you know, stealing information, maintaining long-term access.
But I sense a but.
But ShadowPad has also been observed in other campaigns delivering ransomware.
Oh, okay. So it muddies the water a bit. Is the goal here pure spying, or could it be setting the stage for something more disruptive later?
Exactly. That ambiguity makes it tricky. Is it just intelligence gathering, or is there a potential financial or destructive motive down the line? We don't always know for sure.
And adding another layer of complexity. Mm-hmm. They weren't just using plain ShadowPad.
No. The samples they found were apparently disguised using a custom compiler or obfuscator that they've named Scatterbrain.
Scatterbrain sounds like something designed to confuse analysis.
That's almost certainly the goal. It's like putting the malware code through a shredder and then taping it back together in a weird order makes it much harder for security software and analysts to recognize it for what it is.
So a deliberate attempt to evade detection.
Definitely. It shows the effort these actors put into staying hidden. And the estimated reach of this Scatterbrain obfuscated ShadowPad is quite broad.
How broad?
They think over 70 organizations might have been targeted across various sectors: manufacturing, government, finance, telcos, research.
Yeah, wide net.
Yeah, and they likely got in initially by exploiting an older known vulnerability, an end-day vulnerability in checkpoint gateway devices.
So again, highlighting the importance of patching known flaws, those old vulnerabilities are like leaving a side door unlocked.
Absolutely critical. Even vulnerabilities that have been known for a while can still be effective if systems aren't updated.
And just to bring it back to SentinelOne, that hardware logistics provider, the one that was the initial entry point for Purple Haze.
Yes.
They were also one of the victims of these earlier ShadowPad attacks using Scatterbrain.
That's right. So while SentinelOne themselves weren't directly breached by ShadowPad in this instance, according to their report, their supply chain partner was, they were definitely in the blast radius, so to speak.
Shows how interconnected everything is. But the story doesn't quite end there with threats targeting SentinelOne, does it? There was something else quite unusual.
Yes. The North Korea-linked IT worker situation.
Right. Tell us about that. That sounded wild.
It really is. SentinelOne also reported observing attempts by IT workers, believed to be aligned with North Korea, trying to actually get jobs at SentinelOne using fake personas, fake resumes.
Like applying for jobs using false identities? How many?
Hundreds of fake profiles, and apparently over 1,000 applications were detected.
1,000 applications. That's not a subtle approach. That's a concerted effort.
It's a significant, large-scale effort. It's quite an unconventional tactic for espionage or potential infiltration.
Why would they do that? What's the potential gain?
Well, think about it. Getting an employee on the inside, especially at a cybersecurity company.
Insider access.
Exactly. That could provide access to all sorts of sensitive internal information, proprietary research, customer data, maybe even the ability to sabotage products or plant malware from within. It's a high-stakes, high-reward approach if it works.
That's pretty bold. And then on top of nation-state actors, you've got the regular cyber criminals, the ransomware gangs, also poking around security platforms like SentinelOne.
Yeah, that's another angle. It seems ransomware operators are actively testing their malware against SentinelOne and other EDR endpoint detection and response platforms.
Trying to see what gets past the defenses.
Precisely. It's like they're doing their homework, running their malware in a test environment with the security product installed to see if it gets caught. If it does, they tweak it until it doesn't.
It's a constant cat and mouse game.
It really is.
Yeah.
And there's apparently even an underground market for this. Cybercriminals can buy, sell, or rent access to security platform instances specifically for this kind of testing.
You're kidding. Like a service.
Yeah. They're calling it EDR testing as a service.
Yeah.
Sounds almost legitimate. But it's purely for malicious development purposes.
Wow. The ecosystem around cybercrime is just something else.
It really shows the adversarial nature of the landscape. Attackers are constantly probing defenses, looking for weaknesses, learning how security tools work so they can bypass them.
And speaking of innovative criminal tactics, this Nitrogen ransomware group mentioned in the context of testing, they had a particularly weird approach to getting access, right?
Oh, yeah. That was quite something. Instead of hacking or exploiting, the Nitrogen group was apparently impersonating real companies.
Like pretending to be legitimate businesses.
Exactly. Setting up lookalike domains, using spoofed emails, all to basically trick resellers into selling them legitimate licenses for security products.
So they buy the security tools they want to test against. That's audacious.
It is. It's sophisticated social engineering applied to procurement. By appearing as a genuine customer, they get their hands on the very tools designed to stop them, allowing them to test and refine their ransomware with impunity.
Who are they targeting to pull this off? Surely big vendors have checks.
They seem to be focusing on smaller, perhaps less rigorously vetted resellers. Maybe those with inconsistent know-your-customer or KYC practices.
Ah, finding the weaker links in the sales chain.
Seems like it. It really underscores the importance of strong verification processes, even within the security industry's own sales channels. You'd think they'd be the most careful.
You really would. Okay, let's move on to our final story for today. This one is an update on a data breach we might have touched on before, the VeriSource breach from February of last year.
Right, VeriSource Solutions.
And the news here isn't great. The scope of this breach, the number of people affected, it's grown significantly.
Yeah. The latest reports are saying it now affects potentially 4 million people.
4 million? Wow. That's a huge jump from earlier estimates, wasn't it?
It really is. And it unfortunately highlights just how difficult it can be for organizations to get a firm handle on the full extent of a data breach, especially in the early stages.
And remind us, what does VeriSource do? Why is this significant?
They provide employee benefits administration and HR outsourcing solutions. So they handle incredibly sensitive personal information for employees of their client companies all across the U.S.
Right. So we're talking names, addresses, all the HR stuff.
Exactly. And the timeline here is quite striking and maybe concerning for those affected. The unusual activity was first spotted way back in February 2024.
Okay, over a year ago.
Right. But according to their notification, the full scope, the determination of exactly who and what data was impacted, wasn't completed until April 17th this year, 2025.
April 2025? That's, what, 14 months later?
Over a year, yeah. And notifications only started going out around April 23rd, 2025. That's a very long time between initial detection and full notification.
Why would it take that long? That seems excessive.
Well, investigating a large-scale breach like this is often incredibly complex. Forensic analysis takes time figuring out how the attackers got in, where they went, what specific data they accessed or exfiltrated for potentially millions of people. It's like meticulously reconstructing a massive shattered vase.
Okay, I get that it's complex, but still, over a year, that's a long time for people's data to potentially be out there being misused before they even know the full risk.
It absolutely is. That delay is definitely frustrating and concerning for the individuals whose information is compromised, and the type of data exposed here is about as sensitive as it gets.
What exactly was confirmed as exposed?
Full name, address, date of birth, gender, and the really critical one, social security numbers.
Oof, SSNs. That's the gold standard for identity thieves.
It really is. That's the kind of information that can be used for all sorts of serious fraud, opening fake accounts, filing fraudulent tax returns.
Yeah.
The works.
So what's VeriSource doing for these 4 million people?
They're doing the standard response, which is offering 12 months of credit monitoring, identity protection, and identity restoration services through Experian.
Okay, that's necessary, but as you said, it's reactive. People need to sign up for it.
They absolutely do. And what's also interesting here is that VeriSource had sent out earlier notifications, but to much, much smaller groups.
Yeah, I remember that. Didn't they notify like 55,000 people back in May 2024?
Yes, and then another batch of around 112,000 in September 2024.
So 55,000, then 112,000, and now the total is 4 million. That really shows how assessments can evolve.
Dramatically. It's a stark reminder that those initial figures released after a breach can sometimes be significantly underestimated. The true impact might not be known for many, many months.
So the advice for anyone listening who might have gotten an earlier letter or gets one now from VeriSource or maybe just worked for a company that used them?
Absolutely. Take advantage of those free protection services they're offering. Sign up immediately. And beyond that, everyone potentially affected needs to be incredibly vigilant.
Vigilant how?
Watch out for phishing emails, suspicious phone calls, texts, anything trying to trick you into giving up more information by referencing this breach. Monitor your bank accounts. Credit reports closely for any unauthorized activity.
Good advice. And the final piece of this VeriSource puzzle, do we know how they were breached? Was it ransomware? Did they pay anything?
That's the slightly mysterious part. As far as we know, there haven't been any entries for VeriSource popping up on the major ransomware extortion portals.
So maybe it wasn't ransomware.
It's possible. The lack of a public extortion attempt could suggest the attacker's primary goal might have been purely data theft, stealing that sensitive personal information, likely to sell it on the dark web or use it for other types of fraud, rather than holding the company's systems hostage for ransom.
So it highlights that not all breaches are about ransomware. Sometimes it's just about stealing the data itself.
Exactly. Data theft for its own sake or for resale remains a huge motivation for cybercriminals.
Okay, so wrapping this all up, three very different stories, but they paint quite a picture. What does this all mean as you go about your day?
Well, I think it shows the threats are just constant, they're incredibly diverse, and they're evolving all the time. You've got sophisticated ransomware gangs hitting critical infrastructure and even security-focused companies.
Like Hitachi Vantara, a sobering reminder that anyone can be a target.
Absolutely. Then you have the patient, resourceful nation-state actors employing these intricate indirect techniques for espionage, like we saw with Purple Haze and Sentinel Alone.
Yeah, that whole logistics provider angle and the fake job applications, fascinatingly devious.
It really is. And finally, you have the ongoing challenge of securing vast amounts of personal data and the potentially huge, long-lasting impact when that fails, like with the VeriSource breach.
And the difficulty in even knowing the full scope for months or even a year later.
Exactly. That delay and uncertainty is a major part of the problem for victims.
So these aren't just abstract headlines. They're real-world events with real consequences, shaping our digital lives, whether we realize it directly or not.
Definitely. The Hitachi Vantara attack shows vulnerability even among the experts. The Sentinel Alone discovery peels back the curtain a bit on state-sponsored methods. And VeriSource underscores the long tail of data compromise.
So what stands out to you listening to all this? What questions pop into your head about your own security practices or just understanding this this whole complex threat environment?
It's definitely a lot to think about.
It is. It's a conversation that's always continuing. And honestly, the best thing you can do is stay curious, keep exploring, and stay informed. Thanks for tuning in to Cyber Mornings Daily.